unique opportunity to delve into Devin's mind a little bit on how some of this stuff works if you're interested.
Thank you, Trey, and thank you, Devin. Is there anybody on the board that has a question specifically to Devin at this point? So, Devin, this is Bob. So what impacts does the bond bank have in regards to the COVID impacts in Alaska and the downturn in the economy?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question. Of course, the bond bank is supportive of municipalities and other authorized borrowers through the program in every environment, but in particular sensitive to the current environment. And I think that's when we were working on that refinancing this fall, it was actually a taxable advance refunding, like I said earlier, that we were working on. And now, because of the passage of time, maybe those will shift over to tax exempt. But in considering the structuring of how savings are accomplished or realized by the underlying borrowers, trying to be very sensitive to the communities in particular in that transaction, to ensure that if they needed rate relief in the current year, that we could provide that. But like I said earlier, it's something that we're not going to dictate at the bond bank level. We're just trying to help you do what you would do anyway, right? We're just trying to help facilitate and provide value add on a process that you'd be going through and having to do more work on your own if the bond bank didn't exist.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think that there's going to be a reduced ask of the bond bank for loans because most communities are utilizing the reserves now and probably couldn't make the debt service unless it was some kind of a utility that could build it into their rates. And if I don't know if that changes any of your structure. And then of course it's, some of these guys are going without increased revenues for 2 years. And I don't know if how that affects the payment schedules and all the other things that you can do to help communities move through this crisis that we're having today, or if there's any relief from federal government to the Alaska Bond Bank in regards to that.
And there's not really any federal relief available to the bond bank at this point. I think the bond bank program having the kind of this interruption because of the Supreme Court decision has resulted in a bit of maybe not looking at it as a vehicle for some potential programs for use of federal one-time money or CARES Act funds. But I do know that I have kind of a list of folks that are thinking about things, and they do tend to be revenue bond in nature, like in Ketchikan, thinking about the terminal renovation using the tax that's charged on passenger traffic. King Cove's thinking about a couple of things related to their electric utility. Sandpoint's thinking about a travel lift to help their marine services industry there in town. Craig's trying to get that harbor upgrade accomplished. I know they've got some money in the state's geo bond bill at this point. So if that winds up getting approved, but yeah, definitely there, I would agree that there has been a slowdown in the use of the bond bank over the course of the last, it's probably going on 2.5 years. And a lot of that is just the general state of affairs in the state of Alaska at the state level rather than at the municipal level for much of that time, just because the state's not providing capital grants and there's a lot of uncertainty about the future that I think has caused people to be a little bit more conservative on some of the bigger projects they otherwise might have pursued. but it hasn't had any impact on the ability of the bond bank to function or provide loans. It's still that we have about $1 billion in bonds outstanding, and so it's one of the larger borrowing programs that exists in the state of Alaska. And I'll toot our trumpet a little bit, but I mean, we have two half-time staff that work for the bond bank. We don't self-promote. We don't spend a lot of money on doing anything other than working with authorized borrowers to try to save money. And so we have a very efficient operation without a lot of overhead that I think really is hard for criticism towards it to come from any angle. I mean, whether you're on one side or the other, everybody in general, there's, you know, if one side really likes the bond bank, maybe the other side says, oh, that's maybe too much, even though they're very soft about it. It's been my experience that it's an easy program to like because of its efficiency and the good work that it does. And it's really just all about saving money for Alaskans.
Thank you for that explanation. Anybody else have anything for Devin at this time?
Mr. Chair, this is Joel.
Yes, Joel.
If you don't mind, Devin, I'm Joel Paisner. We've met. I'm counsel to SEPA. And I guess I have a more particular question. I mean, essentially, are you saying that your attorneys can issue opinions so there's no risk if we decide to go with the bond bank? I mean, that, you know, because timing for us is essential with the submarine project. I know Trey has talked to you about that. And so just want to confirm that if we go this direction, that, you know, the status of the litigation in the Supreme Court doesn't present an issue for our issuance.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Joel. The issue with our bond counsel related to them being, so whenever you issue municipal securities, your bond counsel provides an opinion providing validity to the issuance. And so in that opinion, they generally say that with no qualifications, they confirm that the bonds are legal and binding securities. And after the Ford decision on September 4th, and it was a 68-page decision that really went on a variety of topics, touched very softly on a variety of topics that related to that tax credit certificate bond corporation. And one of the topics they touched on was the moral obligation structure, which is identical to the moral obligation that the bond bank has. And so after the decision, it was an unexpected decision from the public finance world. Everybody that I talked to, based on prior case law in the state of Alaska, believed that the court should rule in the state's favor. When they didn't, yet they reaffirmed Carr-Gottstein, it kind of creates this illogical ruling to me, just from a public finance perspective, but it also created a lot of kind of angst on our financing team, like, wow, what does this mean? And what are these words in the, you know, in this section of this large decision? And so with that concern, and then the state pursuing a petition for rehearing with the court, the Ora Carrington, who is our bond counsel, declined to try to get out in front and say, oh, well, we could get to a clean opinion if the court was going to provide clarity due to this petition for rehearing. When they declined, then they did their own internal analysis and determined that they were able to get to that clean opinion. And so at this point, I don't see any issues that could come back to cause the bond bank harm. And even and maybe one other point that I would make to try to provide comfort is Joe Geldof was the lead attorney in the litigation in the Ford case, and they wrote a response to the state's petition for rehearing. And the petition for rehearing cited the bond bank specifically. And in his response, he kind of went through this, in my view, kind of, you know, I won, you lost. I'm really good. You're not good. Oh, but I guess if you need the bond bank, whatever. kind of a discussion. So he kind of went through this big thing. And at the end, he said, well, if you have to say the bond bank's okay, I don't really care. And so I don't think that, again, I think that the litigation that related to the tax credit certificate bond corporation was specific to the idea of using public funds to pay for corporate liabilities, you know, liabilities the state had to corporations, where the bond bank is much more of a feel-good program and much more in line with what somebody would see as a purpose of the state of Alaska to lower the cost of, you know, the folks buying electricity within the purview of SEPA, for example.
Thank you for that. I think we're getting down into the weeds a little bit for the board in regards to this. And there's a deeper conversation to be had about how we get into the bond and apply it. So again, thank you for your time and presentation here. I think it shows not only the ability of the bond bank, but how complicated some of these discussions could be in regards to getting to the place where we're ready to borrow some money. Anybody else on the board have anything for Devin at this time? Thank you. Back to you, Trey.
Great. Thanks, Devin. Appreciate you calling in and taking time out of your day. We'll be talking soon. So.
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Was bummed I couldn't get my camera to work. I was going to show you my sheep mount on the wall.
Yeah, I can show you. There you go.
Good one. All right. Devin. Talk to you later.
Yeah, thanks. All right, resuming where I was, I think we can keep moving forward here a little bit. We'll probably have a break scheduled after this in a little while. So that returns me to my CEO financial cover letter. And I just wanted to point out a couple of things here. For one, the milestone payments on the submarine cable at the top of my memo. We had scheduled some of those. We anticipated they were going to occur prior to the end of the year, and those actually shifted over, and those went out the door this last Tuesday. So I just wanted to point that out to the board, and there'll be some modifications in a budget request to shift those monies from 2020 to 2021 budget to cover that change. And also wanted to mention milestone payment 15. That was an additional payment that was put in there, and it was essentially to memorialize the metals market price adjustment lock-in rates. Because if folks recall, we weren't able to lock in the actual cost of the metals to produce the cable until contract conformance was done. And we were signed on the dotted line. So so we handled it through a milestone payment. And I'll say the process of like a change order, if you will, just because we had established a very clear process to do that. And the total for that metals market adjustment was $239,967.65. So, just wanted to point that out, and we'll have a little business to take care of with that later. And, and I probably should have given the board a little bit of opportunity to ask me any questions they may have had regarding my overall general review of the bonding options that I was investigating. Does anybody have any questions at this time regarding those options?
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, a couple questions for you, Trey. I gather from your presentation here that you're leaning towards the Alaska Bond Bank. Am I reading that correctly?
That is correct. I still want to run out this investigation into the RUS program. But right now, from what I'm seeing in the quotes I'm getting, they're, let's just say they're, you know, they're not formal quotes, obviously, but they're, I'm asking them, you know, first of all, are we eligible? What's your current ongoing interest rates and such like that? Right now, the bond bank is looking like the best option. And on top of that, they have lower administrative costs too. So unless something drastically changes, you know, with RUS or some other type of a discounted rate, I think that right now that's the direction I'm leaning. And what I, from a mechanical perspective, you know, I anticipate doing a final write-up on this, my findings, making a formal recommendation to the board at a special meeting here between now and our June meeting. So I can start working through some of those details, and then the board would take some formal action and authorize me to go forward with that process. And of course, I'll have to secure some bond counsel in conjunction with Joel. And the nice thing going through the municipal bond bank is, you know, those type of attorney fees are a lot cheaper. I think last time we didn't even necessarily need a financial advisor for that particular process. So maybe that was maybe a little too long of an explanation. But. Go ahead. Joel, you had something?
Yeah, if I could just add two things. First of all, I agree the streamlining costs. We don't have to do our, you know, we don't have to go out and get rated with the rating agencies. I mean, there's just a huge savings to the agency for going through the bond bank. The second thing is I have a client down here that I'm counsel to that is a public utility district that has an initial loan with Rural Utility Service. I have the name of a consultant, Trey, that I will send to you because this guy, it just was unbelievable in working with former RUS guy. And I'll send you his name and I can connect you with him just to see if he's, if we're able to secure it through them. Because, you know, one of my co-op clients down here was getting, you know, 1.8% loan. I mean, it's ridiculous, but you know, it's just complicated to go through RUS. It takes time and all of that. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. If I could, Bob, I have a follow-up question.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. Trey, then in terms of your thinking, where does that put us in terms of our own assets in your thinking? In other words, what will we still have, you know, in the bank of our own assets if you were able to pull off what you want to do, you know, kind of an idea of what you're thinking?
I'm not quite sure I understand the question, but that might be answered when we go look at like our fund graphs and stuff, and we could talk in particular on those. If I'm reading you, I think is that what you're getting? You know, how will our reserves look like once we come out of this and restore that funding through bonding and such?
You're right on, Trey. Yeah, and we could wait till then. Yeah, that's part of my question. Of how do we have ourselves protected in a little bit in terms of funding. But yes, thank you.
Okay, great question, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Back to you, Trey.
Yeah, so were there any other questions regarding just the bonding options, the direction I'm going, my plan of action to come back to the board here? And probably maybe I'll just say, you know, 4 to 6 weeks or something with a special board meeting to firm things up with you.
I think that's good.
Okay, I'll move on. You know, I did mention I'm also on top of this. I'm working a parallel path, trying to identify the folks that would support that bonding effort, and that'll be part of my follow up with the board as well. So, other than that, in my financial cover letter, you know, I hit on just typical items for revenue and expense and such. I'll say probably the big standout for here is this is essentially our our year-end update, if you will, how we came out. For folks that may not be familiar, you know, we did shift our fiscal year over the period of this last year from a mid-year fiscal year to a calendar year cycle. And I will say, Kate spent a lot of time trying to put in comparables into the financial packet that show year over year. So you'd actually have something to compare it to. That took quite a bit of extra work to do that. So hopefully you guys find that helpful. So I won't go into the details here. It's all listed right in front of you. And I did make a highlighted what the Whitman true up was this year for displaced SEPA sales. And, you know, as Joel talked about, that whole process was put in place to be consistent with the power sales agreement. And also I'll make a comment about grant monies that we currently still have. We were able to extend that grant for an additional year. We have, I think our balance is $336,733. And we plan to use that primarily for just refining some of our hydrocyte details, including some LIDAR runs and on some of the higher value assets. And also I'm looking into a marine hydrokinetic site as well. I will say, I'll just plug it in here since it kind of fits nicely, is that I am planning to meet with DOE next week. As I've mentioned to the board before, I'm working some channels there just to see if there's a potential partnership on whether it's for a marine hydrokinetic site or possibly another hydro asset. So I'm still running that out and don't have anything firm to report to the board yet, but I just want to let you know I am still chasing those channels. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it back to you to get a motion on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
On page 10.
Yes, go ahead.
Before we move on to the motion, I just had a quick question for Trey with regard to the Whitman true-up that was just briefly went over. I know that I don't see, is that all right if I make a quick question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go right ahead.
I don't see in the agenda that we have any real discussion about the true up within, I mean, I know it's mentioned briefly in the financials, and I may have a question later with regard to how that applies, but specifically for this true up item, I know that there has been a lot of public interest in this particular item here recently in the Ketchikan community. And I'm not sure that we have done a very good job of communicating through public announcements or any kind of a public education process of really what that true up is. How does it apply? And why we're paying it. I know that we'd recently in Ketchikan had an approval or an acknowledgement through our city council specifically for the $633,000 payment. And there's a lot of members of the public that just don't understand what this is. And they see this as a large amount of money being paid at a time through pandemic. So I was hoping that you might, for the sake of public discussion, that you might be able to maybe have a better discussion about this item and why it's necessary and important, if that's okay.
So thank you for that, Jeremy. And I do have written down on my notepad here that there needs to be a future presentation to councils and assemblies because membership changes and there is a lot of, I think, background that needs to be discussed, not only about the true up, but how SEPA works as an interconnected agency and how the three communities fit into that. And there was, you know, questions in regard to the council meeting about why is our community in Ketchikan paying for part of a submarine cable that goes to Petersburg? And of course, as the board members know, and some of us is the fact that we're all in SEPA together, and regardless of where the asset's at, whether it's a Swan Lake dam raise or buying important components for future reliability, that type of stuff, our rate structure for SEPA provides that opportunity to do those things. But with the failure of the submarine cable, again, it falls on all three communities work and fund for the infrastructure of SEPA itself. So I think that you're correct in the fact that there needs to be some public presentations moving forward. It's been a little bit difficult, I'm sure, with COVID, but I think there is opportunities for us to better explain what SEPA does and how it interacts with the community. So I thank you for that. So I guess that would fall to you at a later time, Trey, where we could discuss how that may roll out or if there was something that we need to do in regards to that.
Sure. Yeah, there's you mentioned it yourself. It's a shared risk model, if you will. And I think that's a good way to approach it and discuss it in those terms. And actually the Swan Lake Raise is also another good example, I'll say, for trying to communicate how this shared deal works. So the Norse, actually help pay for the debt service that constructed the dam raise. And that pretty much benefits Ketchikan. Contrary to that, now we've got an issue on the north end, and all three communities are joining together to take care of that issue. So, Carl, I saw that you were off mute there for a minute. Did you have something?
That trade. I agree with what Bob is saying, but when you step into that arena, I just caution you, you're talking to a hostile crowd. and the misinformation that's out there.